This is the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people at the leading edge. One of those people is Alan Wallace. Genuine happiness is specifically what brought us together. Meditation as the path to fulfillment, not enlightenment, fulfillment. Maybe enlightenment's in there too. You talk about, well, you know, I'm not sure about where I am in the Buddhist tradition. You're very Western, as well as having experienced the Buddhist tradition. And Bill, you want to forward?
Well, we think of Buddhism, I think, if we think of it at all, as one of the great religions of the world. You know, like Christianity and Islam and Judaism and Hinduism, and, you know, another one of the great religions, which of course means that we use our ideas of what religion are to describe or to think about, to conceive of Buddhism.
Or dismiss.
Or dismiss, more to the point. But my guess is, based on what you've said, that it's there may be more differences than similarities. That it may be, when we say religion, what we mean and what a Buddhist would mean by religion or philosophy or science. In this globalization you talk about, it seems that we need to begin to understand that these concepts are also culture dependent.
This is certainly true. Words never define themselves. Words are always defined within the context of a time, a place, cultures that themselves evolve. When Western academia encountered such non-Western or non-Mediterranean-based knowledge traditions, traditions of faith, and so forth, I think the boxes that were already in place, psychology, philosophy, anthropology, history, and so forth, the boxes of our departments, were already in place, and then something like Buddhism comes in, and it's like a marble rolling around it. What is Chinese checkers? Waiting, which you're going to fall into one of these holes. It's just a matter of which hole but that hole was prefabricated before this marble ever came in.
I think of it as roulette.
Maybe.
Well, of course, I think the authentic response to this, I think there is an authentic response. I'm going to be really bold here. And that is that traditions such as Taoism, the many schools of Hinduism, and the various schools of Buddhism simply do not fit in the Mediterranean boxes that we have devised based upon our own unique heritage, drawing from the Judeo-Christian and the Greco-Roman. I mean, those are two broad strokes, but those two define Western civilization, that we have been a fusion for a very long time, for 2,000 years, of the Greco-Roman on the one hand, which is a civilization all by itself, and the Judeo-Christian, which is a civilization all by itself, and we are an alloy of those two. And out of that alloy, we have defined, and it's we in Europe, and now all civilizations influenced by Europe, we have defined in our own likeness what we mean by religion. I think, strictly speaking, there are three religions on the planet: Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Those are the three traditions that, on the basis of which we have defined the term religion, and then we wander over to Tibet or India or Sri Lanka or Thailand, we say, ah, there are bald-headed men wearing robes, and they have incense, and they have rosary. They must be religious. Oh, they are bowing. They are worshiping. Oh, they must be religious. But then we see them out in the debating courtyard. If you get that far, you say, oh, no, they must be philosophers. Then we see them meditating and engaging in very, if we could see what they're actually doing, and engaging in very, very sophisticated, rigorous investigations, empirical observations of mental states, and we could say, oh, I get it, you're an internal scientist. But the point is not that Buddhism or Hinduism, Taoism, and so forth are science, or they are philosophy, or they are religion, but rather they are not us. And they deserve to be defined, which is to say, really, to be understood and appreciated in their own terms, and not engage in this type of ideological hegemony or imperialism of saying, if you're worth anything, you will fit into one of our boxes. So when Buddhism confronted or encountered modern academics, they couldn't put it in science. They couldn't put it in history. It wasn't really quite up to snuff for philosophy. because it had practice and it had faith. So they put it in the little bin, which nobody else wanted. Religion.
This, in which this, you have a PhD.
In which, yes, I decided to go for the runt of the litter. But it's an anomaly because our modern universities stand for rationality, for the secular worldview, everything to be put to the test of reason and empirical evidence, empirical, of course, being objective. In which case, I think people in the academic departments of religion feel rather ill at ease. Because what are you studying superstition for? Why would you want to bring your rationality to the study of superstition? Well, I think they're struggling with that ever since secular academic departments of religious studies were founded. Because before then, you had theological departments.
The struggle. One of the interesting things about your representation of Buddhism, the trees that have given their lives for arguments about between science and religion in the West, it is an ongoing argument. It is a vicious argument in various parts of the world, in this country not excluded. And you are talking about an entity that we tend to characterize as religion, where that conflict seems not to exist. And in fact, it seems to integrate a scientific perspective with a religious, what to us would be a religious perspective, with a philosophical perspective. So that integration, for those of us who are, you know, have been fighting for pretty much millennia, too, these science versus religion, and certainly since Copernicus, it would seem that view, given the conflicts and the almost irreconcilable conflicts that we're faced with in the West between our religions, those three religions you mentioned, the Mediterranean religions, and science, that it would serve us well to look at avail ourselves of this different perspective that allows a large number of people to essentially bypass, or at least bypass that conflict, or resolve it in a way that is fresh and new and different to us.
Is that the revolution?
The revolution, the Renaissance, I think, may be sparked in part by Buddhism. I don't want to exaggerate that, because that's a tradition which I myself, of course, am strongly affiliated, but also really tapping into wisdom cultures all over the planet and recognizing there's no one group, no one institution or worldview that has all the answers. But these points you're raising here, I would have to say, first of all, as a person who's been very much involved in Buddhist tradition now for 35 years, you don't have to look very far to find very dogmatic people in the Buddhist fold. I mean, there are Buddhist fundamentalists, as there are Christian and Muslim, and frankly, as there are also people of exactly the same mindset in modern science. And their detractors call them advocates of scientism. That it's basically the one true faith all over again. The one true faith. Science has all the answers. If you're not doing science, then it's posh, you know. You don't have any answers at all. You're just caught up in faith-based whatever. So, but looking outside of our own basin, and it's a good metaphor, looking outside of our own basin, I think is a really good place to start and look with fresh eyes, raising even the question that Carl Sagan brought to our attention very publicly, is there intelligent life elsewhere in the universe? And I think the answer is yes, and it's on our planet. But we may not recognize it because they don't look much like us. And insofar as they don't look like us, it looks like they don't know anything. And they just have faith and belief.
This is parochialism. I mean, in some ways, what you're describing, and I really want to get to the relationship between science and Buddhism and the sixth sense, mm-hmm. as a scientific methodology. The conflicts seem to be predicated on a parochial view that we simply will not let go of, because it doesn't work, but it's familiar. I mean, it seems almost that simple. You know, that's the way we've always done it, and we'll continue to do it that way, even if it doesn't work. Which is, you know, a one definition of madness.
One more instance of an imagination deficit disorder. One understands that's parochialism. such ethnocentricity when it took place 3,000 years ago, when China thought that it was really the center of civilization for the whole planet, when the Greeks had the same idea, when the Jews regarded themselves uniquely as the chosen people of God, the creator of the whole universe. It's understandable back then. You don't know any better. Nowadays,
no new data available.
No new data. You don't speak their language. They live far away. You hardly ever bump into them. They look different. They look funny. They must be barbarian. And so, but this is old hat. This has been going on for centuries, and one can understand that, 1,000 years ago, and even 500 years ago, but now, when we're still living as if. As if nobody had gone beyond, let's say, a horse to get from one place to another, with the kind of transportation and communication and the number of translations that we have from all of the major languages of the planet, and of texts, of literature going back 3,000 years. At this point, and these are at the touch of a keyboard, with being able to purchase books, at this point, to have that kind of parochialism, we should be embarrassed.
Well, you're talking about willful parochialism.
It is willful. I was debating with, more than a year ago, a very, very prominent philosopher. I think I will protect his name. But this whole issue that you just raised about there being a sixth sense, and a sixth sense not with a Twilight Zone, theme music and playing in the background, not that one, but just we can observe states of consciousness. It is possible to become lucid in the dream state and to observe the events in the dream as if you are awake, knowing that you're dreaming and knowing that everything you experience consists of nothing other than configurations of consciousness. That's one prime instance of this noetos, of this what Buddhists call mental perception, a sixth mode of perception. But we don't need to fall asleep first. That's just when the theater is open, especially. But during the waking state, we can cultivate and refine that ability to observe mental phenomena, and it opens up a whole realm of science that we've hardly touched, both for knowing but also for tapping into where we started from, and that is, what are our internal resources that could give us a sense of flourishing, not only in times of felicity, when things are going swell, but in times of cataclysm, of personal disaster, environmental disaster. Can we possibly flourish even when the outer circumstances are really going down?
In 20 seconds or fewer, I will give that philosopher his moment as well. How in the world did he object to that?
Well, I mentioned this anonymous philosopher, number one, because I found his mind hermetically sealed. But when it came to even raising this, considering this position, and this was a philosopher of mine, by the way, this possibility of actually developing a refined ability to observe mental states, his reference to all of Buddhist meditation was, well, if you people want to stare at your navels, that's fine by me. And this man is at a very, very major institution. And when he said that, it was kind of like my jaw dropped and my eyes bugged out. People are still saying that? People are still saying that? I was frankly astonished that anybody who's even literate could make such an extraordinarily foolish statement. And this man is not a fool. And that's the enigma. The man is not a fool. He's extremely knowledgeable, very erudite. But there's a willful ethnocentricity there and a willful refusal to look outside of his own box. I found that quite astonishing and quite troubling, actually.
That's his 20 seconds. We'll be back with Alan Wallace and find better ways to go exploring, unseal some of those hermetically sealed boxes when we return in just a moment. Please be with us.